أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear viewers and welcome to the show Reflections where we usually discuss a verse or a hadith from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Today we'll be discussing a particular sentence from the letter from Imam Ali alayhi salam to Malika Ashtar, who was the appointed governor for the region of Misr of Egypt during the time of Imam Ali's rule. In this letter, the Imam says that there are two kinds of people. They are either your brother in faith or your equal in humanity. This is indeed a profound statement and guideline for anyone, let alone an appointed leader. And today we have Brother Miqdad Versi, who is here to discuss this particular sentence. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Brother Miqdad Versi is from the UK. He's an active member of the Islamic Society over there in the UK and works intensely with the youth, with Islamic development, Islamic research, and as well as social integration. He has had his articles published in the Journal of Shia Islamic Studies that has been published by ICAS, if I'm not mistaken. Brother Miqdad, Assalamu alaikum again once again, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, the way in which a person or a society treats another, whether they be similar or different, is, you can say, the essence of any faith, or can be used to really judge that faith from a human perspective. And with regards to what the Imam has mentioned here, and this particular guideline, which is which extends beyond this individual of Malika Ashtar and to us all in the way in which we should treat one another, you can say that this is really shows the beauty of the religion of Islam and how it looks at all people as one. So you're either a brother in faith or an equal in humanity. So if you're not within the same belief system, you are still looked at as equal from the eyes of creation by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in light of today's issues with regards to how we as Muslims integrate with society, obviously there is, you can say, a big gap when it comes to following this advice by Imam. Brother Miqdad, what is your perspective on this?
Firstly, thank you very much for having me on this show. I think one of the big and important parts of understanding this individual statement is recognizing that Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he's giving a statement to Malik al-Ashtar, he's giving something which is a statement which is supposed to run the society in which Malik al-Ashtar is the governor of. And we are now in a situation in the world where perfection and understanding what we want to be as a perfect society, as Muslims, is very, very important. We have many people with very different points of view and understandings, and every single person within the faith and outside the faith is having a significant amount of clashes. There's a lot of discussion on an intellectual level, fine, but also on a very, very much more aggressive and violent level. And there is a difficulty from our perspective as to how to deal with this. Well, when we look at our society, our community, ourselves, because we look at ourselves first before we judge others, when we look at ourselves, how do we treat others? How do we treat others? When we want to be treated in a nice way, in a specific way, this idea of reciprocity, how do we treat others in our community? Mm. Do we treat the Muslims, the other Muslims, whether they are of different sects, as brothers in our faith? And by brothers, of course, we mean brothers or sisters in faith. Or do we treat them as different, as others? When it comes to the Christians, the Jews, the other faiths, do we treat them as equals in humanity, like Imam Ali alayhi salam says? Mm. As Shias, we are someone, we look up to Imam Ali alayhi salam. Yet, do we actually embody the words that he actually puts forward very, very clearly, categorically? This is not something which is an ambiguous statement. Mm. It is categorical. It is, if you like, a commentary on many verses of the Quran when it talks about being just in the earth. When Allah says, "Inna Allah yuhibbul muqsitin," Surah Ma'idah, Allah loves those who are just. What does He mean by this? Does it mean only just to the Muslims, only just to the Shias? Or is it saying, no, we need to be just to everybody? In the same letter, actually, to Malik al-Ashtar, Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions in other places about how it's not just about being good and being virtuous to one group of people, it's to everybody. Sure. And this is something that's very important. We seem to really lack this in many of our communities.
And now, that being your overall observation, don't you feel that it has also been from the perspective of Muslims towards non-Muslims? I'm not talking about within the Muslims. Don't you feel that there is somewhat of a stigma or a complex that Muslims have, that I am looked upon as different or lower, and I always have to defend myself, and why should I extend my hand or continuously extend my hand? Because many a times, you know, if you look at the world situation, because you have to look at the world situation and how Muslims have been treated, you know, and can you really blame Muslims to a certain extent, that, you know, to not desire to extend their hand out to, not that they don't do it, I'm not saying that Muslims don't extend their hand and have a good etiquette towards non-Muslims, but there is a complex.
I think this is beautifully dealt with by Imam Ali alayhi salam in this letter itself. He says in another place, you should not treat good people and bad people alike. So although you should be just to everybody regardless, but if someone is good and someone is bad, there is a difference. So when you have good people who are Christians, there are of course many good Christians, there are many good Jews, there are many good people of all different faiths.
Right.
When they are good, you treat them with the utmost respect and dignity,
right,
in the way such that you can show that Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam has said, your akhlaq, your behavior, your etiquette towards other people is your da'wah towards them as well. And it is a key part of how, in our society right now, how we are perceived. Because when you are trying to deal with this Islamophobic
pressure
that we have in our society, That has to be done in many ways. One of the ways, though, which is very important, is the grassroots. It's about the individual saying, I know a Muslim, he's not like what this person's saying in the media.
Right.
I know, so, you know, even in places like America, where the media environment is clearly not, would be considered hostile and in the nicest of ways.
Right.
Even in places like that, when people start getting to know Muslims, things are different. In Times Square, very recently, there was one of these guys, you know, the guy who wanted to burn the Quran in public. This guy, he went and said, oh, all these bad things about Muslims. He was shouting out on a microphone. A group of 30 people came around and started singing, Muslims are not like this, and then, you know, all these different things. There are great people out there in this world. And we have to really, really appreciate the humanity that is out there, rather than considering faith to be the be-all and end-all of that individual, and say, because he's of a different faith, I consider him to be a lower person or not deserving of justice, equity, and fairness.
So we need to overcome these stigmas. We need to change our ways. And what are some practical ways in which individuals and communities, Muslim communities, because I'd really like to address that, because many individuals are just following the community in which they are in. They may practice good behavior towards their neighbor who's a Christian, who's a Jew, who's a Hindu, but their communities aren't doing anything systematically to integrate with society while maintaining their own values at the same time. There is really, at a community level, not much being done in this. So how can we practically come out of this and start to be more active?
I think we need to split this on method of social integration into two different areas. Okay, firstly is what you do as an individual, and secondly is what you do as a community or as a group. So as an individual, there are a lot of things that you can do and should be doing. And we've talked about a couple of them. You know, you as an individual, make sure your etiquette is very clear. You're a Muslim. You're someone who's involved in the society. Mm. People know you're a Muslim, and they know through your behavior who you are, through your social interactions with individuals, with your neighbor. You know, does your neighbor know who you are at Christmas time or at Eid time? Do you actually integrate in any way? Do you invite them over sometime? Do they know who you are as a person, such that when they go and tell their friends, etc., that can make a difference? We know, you know, even in England right now, there's been a latest census. They said that 5% of the population is Muslim. Well, 5% of the population is Muslim. That's 1 in 20. If you tell one person you're a Muslim, the other person tells somebody else, you're almost, you know, with the way that networking works nowadays, everybody will know.
Sure.
It is very, very clear that on a grassroots level, on a personal level, things can really make a difference. And that's not just with the friends and the colleagues, friends and in a personal home environment, also at work, your colleagues, your acquaintances, other people you know. You deciding how you should interact from when it comes to your personal principles, how are you going to interact in that way? Thinking about these things in advance so you don't suddenly get in a difficult situation and then look very bad in front of the other person. That's on a personal level, and we can discuss that more if you would like to.
Right.
Then there's a community level. And this is where the impact potentially is very large. First is the persuasion of the community of the benefits of social integration. You know, whether it's talking about Nahj al-Balagha and the way Imam Ali alayhi salam is talking about, whether it talks about the Qur'an. When the Qur'an, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ مِنْ ذَكْرٍ وَأُنْثَى وَجَعَلْنَاكُمْ مِنْ شُعُوبًا وَقَبَائِلَ لِتَعَارَفُوا. We have created you from male and female and from tribes so that you may know each other. From various tribes and nations so that you may know each other. What does this mean? These different ethnic groups, different groups of people, so that you may know each other. This difference among sects, amongst people, is very important in understanding who the other person is. And when we have this Quranic justification, when we have Imam Ali alayhi salam and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, throughout time, all the different Imams, very, very active and clear on this, it is sometimes a bit of a shame to look at ourselves and see that we are not doing this. So how can we do it? So firstly, it's the persuasion of the community. That's a very important first step, because unless you've got the community behind you, it's very difficult to make the community do something and be as effective as you'd like to be. Now, when you look at the community itself, the various options that you can do, and that they are working with local religious organizations. So there are many other religious organizations who do fantastic work, whether it's working with homeless people, whether it's working with just people who are less advantaged than us, disadvantaged communities, whether it's people who are young and who have great potential in the future.
Right.
All of these different people, great faith organizations, do a great job in the West, and I'm sure over here as well, in impacting the society going forward. What are we doing? And we need to try and make sure that we are helping others, whether it is Muslim and non-Muslim, whether it is someone of faith or someone without faith. Because when they see the justice and the way that we act with other people, that is one of the greatest flag bearers of Islam. So that's how communities can start thinking about things from a faith perspective. But there are lots of secular organizations, there are lots of political organizations, there are lots of different things that are happening in society that Muslims need to be part of. Not because they are Muslims, but because they are part of the society. And one of the things that you see specifically in the West, but also around here, is that Muslims should not be just takers of the society. In many countries, there's a welfare state. The government gives significant amount, and sometimes Muslims are amongst the poorest in society, those on benefits. Sometimes that's the case. Well, if we are net receivers of all of this, is that how we should be? Are we supposed to be taking? Right. Or should we be the people who are actually giving back and saying, no, you know what? Our time, our effort should be spent in helping the society develop, become stronger and more integrated, such that every person knows who a Muslim is. And whatever anybody else says, that won't make a difference. Then there are many other things that community groups can do in terms of the media itself. Get involved in the media. When a media story comes out, not just when it's to do with Muslims, also when it's not to do with Muslims, coming out and saying, you know what, Islam from our perspective doesn't say this kind of thing. You know, in America right now there are these shootings, Muslims were one of the first who came out and said, you know what, there was a big conference when Barack Obama was president and many others were present. And the first thing, a little boy was out there and he read the verses, various verses of the Quran, talking about justice, talking about the fact. And that is what we need. Mm. And we have that an individual translating it, explaining how Islam is with the people who are have passed away. And it's about showing that we are human. Mm. We are as human as the local Christian. Mm. And when something bad happens, we feel it. We are parents. We are husbands. We are wives. Well, I'm not a wife, of course. But everybody, we're all part of the community.
Right.
And until and unless there is that barrier broke from who we are, and that happens on a personal level and on a community level, many of the Islamophobic media attacks on the Muslim community will not be able to be countered as effectively because people don't see that.
Well, I think you've brought in brought up a very important point, and that is in our activism within the media, or you know, within the social realm, and having a louder voice with the general issues of society, and that's, you can say, is completely missing. We only sort of, as Muslims, we only sort of stand up when we are directly affected within our communities, or when we are particularly attacked. And if you were to correlate this to this behavior to the statement by Imam Ali, it's really, if we take that as a criteria, you can say we have failed in the social aspect, in acknowledging that all humans, regardless of their faith, are equal in creation. And we really need to do a lot more. But at the same time, we can't deny that we as Muslims, when it comes to the West, and even here in Tanzania, where the media is dominated by non-Muslims, the main TV channels, radio stations, and the newspapers tend to skew the perspective when it comes to real issues. Dealing with Muslims, Muslim rights, and the Muslim community. There's indeed a lot of Islamophobia that's taking place. How does a community like ours break through this and then properly raise this voice? Because, I mean, we will have on one side this group of people who are trying to integrate and do good and who are constructive, and you have a destructive force on the other side. And how can we deal with this? It's a big challenge.
Oh, it is a huge challenge. And it's not something that can easily be solved in this program. Mm. But it's something that we have to think about and strategically understand from our perspective. Right? Mm. We have two different angles, as you've rightly pointed out. There's a constructive side, and it's about maximizing that constructive side. Mm. The more you're able to maximize it on the grassroots level and on the higher level, and we'll talk about both levels in a second, the better it is. But it's also about trying to mitigate as much of that negative at the same time.
Correct.
But you can't do one without the other. It needs to be done on a parallel basis. And it has to be understood from our perspective, from Muslim perspective, but from a human perspective, that we are not just focused on Muslim issues. Mm. So this Islamophobia is going to affect the Muslim issue. And it's important to deal with that. I mean, we will deal with that in just a few seconds.
Right.
But we have to realize that when the economy is going down, we're getting affected as well.
Sure.
Why are Muslims standing up when it comes to some issues? But what about the economy? I mean, the economy is a big, big part of life.
Right.
It's something that's very important. If you don't have Muslims out there, in the public eye, talking about all of these issues, then why would the news media start relying on these individuals? It is... Of course, there'll be some people with agendas at play, and it'll be very, very difficult. And we'll talk about that again if we have time. But what about these individuals? We have great leader potentials. Hmm. We have potential leaders who are there, who really can speak very eloquently. They're able to get to the heart of the matter and say the thing that is right, and that will the masses will be affected by in a positive light. But you've got to get these people out there. You need to have people who are well known for their views on various topics. And it's not just about Muslim topics. So that's a very key part of dealing with Islamophobia, is to try and counter it by showing, you know what? This is wrong. Factually incorrect. Muslims are not like this. Why? Because we've got people out there who are doing this who are not like this. Right. From that high level and then from the grassroots level that we talked about. You know, whether it's one of the great things that happened after in the UK, after some of these films came out about Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. What did people do? We had a group of young people who went out and giving roses to individuals with the hadith of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam on the side. So it basically said, you know, the Prophet used to talk about justice in a nice way. Talk to be nice to your community, nice to other people of various faiths, nice to your wife, nice to your... All of these different things are various hadith or narrations from the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And what do they do? Give these roses to people.
Right.
It got media attention, it was seen as something positive, automatically snowball effect, people put it on their Facebook, on social media, on Twitter, it spreads, people hear about it. Now, all of these positive type stories, of course there's not enough light being put on them, but if there's not enough of them out there, it won't happen. Right. You need to have 1,000 of these for 5 of them to be heard by other people. And we have to really maximize this kind of thing to make it possible for that to happen. And that's a real... big on the positive side that we need to really, really, really encourage and push forward.
Right.
Now, when it comes to trying to mitigate some of the negatives that happen when it comes to Islamophobia, there are two different approaches that can be taken. Mm. And again, they could be done in parallel, or they could, depending on the strategic benefits and when they're assessed accordingly, one of them might be taken. One is developing your alternative media directly. You know, channels such as these, channels that are there to try and produce our voice as to what we think is the right thing, what Islam actually represents, rather than what somebody else wants to say it means.
Right.
And that doesn't mean only on a TV basis, it doesn't only mean on a radio basis, it also means on newspaper, also means on social media, also means on blogs, making sure that we're, you know, right at the front of the media opportunities and technologies, and making sure that we're really out there. And it's not... It has to be quality content. It has to be quality and something that really is able to capture the audience. Not focused on one group of people, but focused on everybody. Because by focusing on everyone, we're realizing what Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying here is they're human beings too. They are equals in humanity.
Right.
And what benefits us in 99% of the situation will also benefit everybody else as well. And so it's about trying to make sure that what we do is very much for the wider society. And how do we do that? And how do we show that through these various media? And making sure it's not just the standard media forms, but also the Twitter, the Facebook, the social media, the blogs, Tumblr, and various other alternatives that are out there. So that's one option. Create your alternative. Now, that always has its limitations. Because in Tanzania, what Muslims are very... are half the population, maybe. And the Shia Muslims are what... a few percent, 10% of that maybe, I'm not sure, is that
lower than that? Yeah.
Even lower than that. So when you are a small proportion of the overall, there are always likely to be other media organizations out there which are significantly bigger, better funded, better, a wider coverage and distribution of their newspapers and subscribers to the various things that they do. That is by its nature.
Right.
And you're not likely to be able to change that. In the UK, for example, we have something called the Muslim News as an independent organization which does that Muslim side of things.
Right.
And it's very well read, it's got 100,000 readership, etc., all that kind of thing. It has different award ceremonies. Great, great. That's one side. How many people can that reach? There's a limit, because the number is very...
If the Muslim community in general is recognizes these values, then individuals... professionals, skilled professionals who are from the Muslim community and have a righteous perspective, because what we are not wanting to convert people or for them to just follow the Islamic way. We want to present to the broader society righteousness. So if we have this value, not only in amongst the Muslim society but also in the general society, and we have such individuals within the various media organizations, then we can, even at that stage, also have a better presentation of the reality.
Agreed. Yeah. So, I mean, so one impact is, one way is going through this sort of independent means, but the other way is, as you rightly pointed out, is really leveraging what we already have and making sure that Muslims are part of the various media
organizations.
They're involved, but at at the right level. Of course, you know, having a lot of Muslims who are the runners and the people who are doing the photocopy is all well and good, but really doesn't really have the impact that we want. We need to make sure that Muslims of the right caliber are going into media. It's not seen as something which is, oh my God, you're going into media. It's instead, you know, the Muslim community as a whole, doctors, engineers, or something else is seen sometimes seen as the best type of profession. Yeah, okay, to some extent, there are many benefits associated with that, and you should never put them down in any respect. But then the same thing occurs with media. Media is something that the elite of the Muslim community have not gone into so far. They've gone into many other fields. And making sure that the right caliber of individuals is able to get into these organizations and develop. Because sometimes the strong and the powerful and the people who have the oratory power that is necessary in these various media organizations aren't there. And when they are there, regardless of what the agenda is at play, you will be able to make far more progress than others in such a situation. And when you have more, and I said, you know, maybe you need to have 100 for 5 to make any real impact.
Yes.
And that's always the case. It may be totally unfair, but make sure you skew the dice in our favor, if you'd like. You know, make sure that we have enough people out there such that you can't, we have that opportunity to really make that impact. And when there is a vote, for example, who the next editor would be, or we are there to make sure we are lobbying in that in that organization.
The representation is there, yeah.
And make sure when somebody says something which is totally and utterly false in every single way, we make it very clear that it is false in every single way. When there is, for example, something which is done, which is clearly Islamophobic, make it clear. But not only when it's Islamophobic, when it's Christianophobic. Right. I don't know if that is a word, but if there's something which is majorly against Christianity, make sure we stand up and say, look, this is something that we stand with our Christian brothers in humanity. They are our equals in humanity, and we are standing up with them, and we say that what this media organization has done is wrong for the Christians. And when something happens to the Muslims, inshallah, they will stand up with us as well. And this is what we need to do. We need to start building these links.
Right.
It's building these networks as a community, as a group of people, so that when media organizations do something negative, we are there to make that difference.
Right. Okay, thank you, brother. And with that, I would like to take a break, and we'll be back very soon, inshallah, after a few minutes. Assalamu alaikum, dear viewers, and welcome back to the show Reflections. Today we're discussing the statement from Imam Ali alayhi salam to Malik Ashtar, which is that there are two types of people. They're either your equal, they're either your brother in faith or your equal in humanity. And this was mentioned in the letter to Malik Ashtar when he was appointed the governor of Misr. And unfortunately, he never got to rule Misr because of the opposition towards such a kind of leadership, and inshallah we will talk about that towards the end of the show. Prior to the break, we were discussing about how the Muslim community can embody this statement and apply the lesson of this statement by having a more active role in society and in media as well. Moving on with the discussion, I would like to bring up the issue of there being a lot of segregation and differences and unfair treatment, because this statement is all about treatment and how you view one another. But what about the part of this statement which says that that they, one of the two kinds of people, is your equal in faith. So this particularly refers to the people within your community, within the Muslims. We see on a daily basis a very unfair treatment towards Muslims, fellow brothers and sisters, who are of a different class, a different race, or any sort of group or subgroup, whether it's a sect or a country of origin or a language that they speak or a culture that they follow or even a town that they're from. How do we overcome this particular aspect? Because in essence, we are promoting this message of equality, but within ourselves we have a lot of problems. What's your view on that, and how do you advise our viewers, Muslims in general, to overcome it and fix these problems?
Thank you very much for that question. I think one of the important parts to recognize is understanding and identifying the problem in more detail. Mm. So, why is this happening within the Muslim community? Why is there this situation where, you know, there are the various sects, okay, that's theological differences, but even within various sects, you have great differences by income class, by ethnic background, by language, etc., as you mentioned.
And a particular problem here in Tanzania is race. It's very unfair treatment between the different races. You'll find amongst the Shia believers themselves that the African believers attend one center, and the non-Africans or the Arabs attend another center, and the Indians attend another center. And I think I'm sure you have many examples of the same being done in the UK. But how do we address this issue?
So one of the key parts is really getting to the bottom of it. So why is this happening? Because a lot of people want to protect their culture. They want to protect where their roots are. Mm. And understanding that is a very key part of trying to solve that problem. Mm. And when we see that this idea of protecting culture is a key part of what we want to do, what part of the culture is very important? Okay, so there's a religious heritage that we have. There are specific types of how you eat, food, and all this kind of other things. Mm. But everything, what are the other parts specifically that are important? And in the end, if you have these things and you have a choice, do you want to try and protect these to the detriment of the wider society? Mm. If you have that choice, if you have to decide whether you keep a specific language which will then exclude a greater part of the society, mm. will mean that you're unable to affect the wider community, then do you have to stand back and think again? Mm. Do you have to think, well, maybe what we want is a situation where if I'm giving a lecture and a person walking by on the street hears that lecture, they're affected, they come in, they find out more, and they want to know more about Islam.
Right.
Is that the way that we want to do it? Mm. Or do we want to say, you know, here's our community, we want to try and develop ourselves insularly and in that kind of way? And if you want to do that, what are the trade-offs that we're at play here? And we have to really understand what this trade-off is. I think at this moment in time, there is a great understanding that, okay, we want to protect our culture, fine. But we don't understand what the effect of that is.
Right, yes.
And the impact on the wider society and on our Islamic message. Mm. And until we understand this trade-off, and specifically this impact on the wider society, we will not be able to make that choice in a way that is informed. Mm. And this is key, because when we want to try and understand all these Islamophobic things, one of the things that's always talked about is the sort of insular nature of the Muslim community, not just within here, but also in the West. And, you know, even trying to understand, you know, if you're in England, making lectures in English so that not just the Indian person, but also the Iraqi person, but also the random guy on the street is able to understand.
Right.
That change takes time, and it's difficult to deal with. But that is a key part of that long-term development of the community, to be part of that society. Because once you're part of that society, rather than a separate enclave within that society,
right, yes.
Only when you are part of that society can you really make that impact. Mm. Can you be an individual who everyone knows, who then can say, you know what, that's Islamophobic, you're talking to me in a way that is really not fair, and you know what, I'm part of this community, you can't treat me differently. I am one of you, and I am a citizen of this country, so you treat me as equal. But if you're by yourself as a different group, it's very difficult to do, to make that same claim with the same kind of gravitas and strength that we need to.
Well, unfortunately, it's a very big problem, I think, in the West, because the Western system somewhat forces you to integrate with a diverse group of people because of the diversity of the society over there. For example, if you go to university, you have to share the space with a diverse group of people, which you, if you have some prejudices, they eventually go away because of the time you spend together, the way the system is set up within the university.
We'd
within
like
the system,
that to be the case.
Right?
I don't know if that actually is the
case. But outside of that, we tend to go back to that square one, if we can call it that, where we remain with our own culture. We don't extend our hands outside. And we don't really care about what the guy on the street is, what he's believing, following, or what his direction is. And that's completely wrong. And in, you can say in Tanzania you have the same problem, but I guess another flavor of it.
And it's very difficult to really, really get to the bottom of this and make a big change, because there are a lot of strongly held views that have been developed through time, and sort of the arguments to justify them have been developed through time.
Right.
But a lot of these arguments that have been used to justify these preconceived ideals have been done without looking at the wider society and the various alternatives out there. What about a model where you are in a situation where you can have a greater impact on the wider society? Because you speak more Swahili, for example, because you have the ability that someone on the street is able to be part of that community. And it also, you have this sort of desire side of things. Do you really want to be part of the wider society?
Right.
And sometimes, if you don't even have that in there, it's just not going to happen. And we need to realize how important that is. You never have the Prophet or any of the Imams isolating themselves in that way. I mean, it's almost the opposite. Just at various times in the Prophet's life, they've been isolated and put aside and chased out of various places. I mean, you need to do the exact opposite.
Right.
You need to show how, after the Prophet conquered Mecca, he said, it's free here. You did this to my father, you did this to my mother, you are still free right now.
Right.
I'm open.
That's
this
all,
is the kind of way
forgiven,
we do it.
Yes.
And this kind of real, open, forgiving attitude is done throughout the Imams. We see that through Imam Ali alayhi salam that we've talked about, but also through Imam Zain al-Abidin when he has the Charter of Rights that is there. Throughout all of the various Imams, throughout all of the our heritage, we see the importance of this. Yet we don't seem to really value it in the same way as some of the arguments that are being made to encourage this isolation. So, one of the great steps that we need to do is just have that education done, that there is this other side. There's a lot that we're missing by doing this.
Right.
And really emphasize this and show the power from a religious perspective as well as from a human perspective about how wrong this is, if that's our view. And until that happens, then the first level cannot be broken. Even if that is not broken, however, there's so many other things that need to be done regardless of that. That's one part. But the other sides are, for example, working much more with the wider community, with various religious faith groups, with the various sect of ethnic groups working together on issues.
Right.
Even if you are going to be separate, for which there are pros and cons and there are discussions that need to be taken on them, that doesn't mean that work cannot be done together on various issues where there is mutual benefit. And that's what needs to be done. So even, within the Shia community, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is something which holds everyone together. So I'm sure that everyone can go together on many of these issues.
Absolutely.
And talk about it.
And there's so many anchors that can bring everyone together. I mean, just the existence of one God or divine values. And we all share the desire to have divine values here on earth, that justice, unity, fighting against oppression, fairness. I mean, you talk to anyone on the street, regardless of their background, they'll all desire these things.
And even economic issues, even social issues, even youth issues. I mean, you have the things that are seen to be more religious relationships, but also those which are seen as, seem to be, whether they are or not is another question. But the secular questions, education, you know, all of these various youth, economy, finance, understanding how the society as a whole should work, governance, corporate governance, how companies, tax law, everything. All of these parts of things are things that we can work together with various other people because we have a viewpoint. Let's be involved. Let's make a stand. Let's be part of that. Because until we are part of the discussion, we are rather than us being part of that discussion, we're being talked to. We need to be part of the people who are talking.
Absolutely. It's an excellent point that you bring up. And I think that's the only way in which people will be really attracted to Islam as a systematic solution, that we don't really present the alternative or the Islamic viewpoint on all these areas that you're mentioning, for example, the economic policies and law and legislation, etc. You know, if we first of all need to learn more about these things, that's one, and be more less come out of our state of laziness and really, really appreciate what Islam has to offer in this sense, and then take it to the society and present it, because there will come a day in which that solution is needed and you should be ready to give it. And if we are not as Muslims, then we will be at fault, really.
And I think we sometimes have to understand the nuance of this as well. I mean, it's not always the case that we can say this is the Islamic solution on the question. And especially when it comes to youth issues, economic issues, others, there may not be an Islamic solution. But if we as Muslims are not making our viewpoint clear, as Muslims, as human beings within the society, not necessarily only from an Islamic perspective, but also from, as we said, as a human perspective, then we will not be part of that discussion. And that's the key point here. It's not necessarily the case that we can say, you know, Islam says the tax law should be 35%. You know, we don't know, right? Sure. It could be 33%. But we should be part of that discussion. That is the key point. We need to be there who are saying, you know, we want to be pulling in a certain direction. Well, let's do that. Let's realize the importance of lobbying, being part of that discussion. Because if we don't, then we'll always be talked to, not part of that discussion.
Right. Brother Miqdad, with that, I would like to close this discussion. I think that's a wonderful place to end. And there's a lot of implications of being more active, being more vigilant on the part of us as Muslims. And I think we really need to take these lessons forward and apply them to our daily lives. And it's amazing how a sentence like this by Imam Ali alayhi salam can have such a strong implication on the life that we live individually and in society as well. Brother Miqdad, I thank you very much for joining us in the show today, and wish you well in your further endeavors and studies as well, inshallah.
Thank you very much.
With that, we would like to close the show, and we hope we'll see you again here on Reflections. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.